All right.
Okay. I lost my place for a second. So he believes, this man McNatt believes that, what I was saying is that he believes this man called Changi Binder, which coincidental name. He was a very powerful, infamous drug dealer in the 70s and 80s. Like, they kind of credit him, like, they act like he invented crack or something. Or he says he's the first person to sell crack in Houston. I don't know. Or meth, I forgot what it was. But, he, killed his girl. He found her in his area where he would always be around. And, he made the police report himself. McNatt, he wrote it, or at least parts of it. He described it to me a while back, so I don't remember exactly. But he had a hand in the investigation. And he had wrote down the report number or something, and the date. And when he searched for it later on, maybe like a month later, to see if any developments in the case happened, because he kind of had the suspicions of Changi Binder, the report was gone. It didn't exist. And it upset him. He complained to the superiors, basically alleging, he was telling me that only the chief of police could delete it, and that the chief obviously was corrupt and was covering it up because his girl was like an indigent, you know, she probably had family that was poor or almost no family. She might have been a runaway, stuff like that. So they got really mad that he was questioning them, and he never really heard. He dropped it because other cops were telling him to drop it, that he was putting himself in danger. So he did, but he's never forgot about it. I haven't worked on this yet because I obviously have my plateful, but he probably says he remembers enough where I could probably find this little girl or this young girl, if they reported her death at all. Johnny Binder is infamous. Maybe you can look it up. Actually, it might be really hard to find this. I found it in court documents. But actually, no, I'm lying, because there is an article somewhere about this jewelry heist. It's like on ABC 13, Channel 2, one of those stations, on their little website. Johnny Binder, and they paint him in a very good light, saying, oh, he's a poor black man or something like that. Oh, he's coming home for the holidays, he was exonerated, blah blah blah, which is bullshit. Because I saw what his appeal. I saw his file. He was part of this, allegedly part of this jewelry heist. People identified it. It was this guy and that guy, blah blah blah, and then he got caught up. Eventually, I'm not sure how long it took. He even got in a shootout with the police. The perpetrator, and they caught this guy, Johnny Binder, said it was him, he lost the case, blah blah blah, and then he's working on his appeal, having a powerful lawyer, and in this jewelry heist, I think it was like about $500,000 or $1 million to $1.5 million in jewelry was stolen. It was never returned, it was never found, and he somehow has his powerful, powerful, high-priced lawyer, makes a great appeal for him, or writ of habeas corpus, I think, exactly. I mean, it's not even that great, to be honest, because the only reason he got out was that they claimed he had evidence of his alibi, stuff like that, where there's a phone call that was an alibi evidence of him, and then that he was somewhere else. He was in Dallas, I believe, he said. And then his friend said, yeah, he was with me in Dallas. And then they claim all this receipts of this hotel where I logged in, or the guest logging, it shows I was in Dallas. And it's stupid because literally it's a thing that has another man's name on it. It's like, oh, well, that was my alias, you know. I used this so no one could track me down. And somehow the Court of Appeals accepted this as evidence, and also this confession from, like, I think two people who claimed they were the perpetrators in California. Like, why the fuck would anyone confess to a crime like that? Like, you're out. You're not you're free. You got away with it. Another guy got convicted. You're going to feel bad for a guy in Texas and say, oh, it was me, so you can catch the charge? That's stupid. Clearly, well, from what I saw, it looked like he paid these people to take the fall. And I'm pretty sure if I'm in jail for some serious stuff or a prison for some serious stuff, some guy offers me a lot of money to just take the fall for something that I could probably that I didn't do and probably would get a lenient sentence if I got a good lawyer, which maybe that guy would pay for. I'm pretty sure if I was one of those kind of people, criminals, I would take that deal. You know, like, come on. Like, it's clear what they did. And they accepted this, all this, and let the guy go. And he has a serious criminal history of being charged, not convicted, of charged of a lot of, like, sex trafficking of minors and just weird stuff. He beat some lady, like, beat her up in her face, pummeled her in public outside of a hotel in 2016, and he got off. And the judge kept letting it get off on some of these serious charges, and then would pursue smaller charges like drug possession instead. And would right there, oh, we convicted him on a different crime. Come on. This judge is the same judge that Richard Wayne Collins had in Court 177, Judge Robert Johnson. This dude has to be crooked as fuck. Like, he just is. He let this guy go. He's over there ignoring Richard's requests. He's not answering nothing. Apparently, I heard he was under investigation for something. He had already been accused of preferential treatment with electing or appointing court-appointed attorneys over the public defenders. And, like, to an incredible, strange rate, like, they recommended about 15% or something, that they should give him 50% of priority. I don't know how to explain that. I just picture the number 15. That's important. And instead of doing 50% or anything close to it, he would do 0.5%, something like that. And everybody else, all the other individuals, defendants, would get court-appointed attorneys. And Judge Jerry Guerinot was a court-appointed attorney. And it's like, pretty likely that he's getting some kickbacks or something from these attorneys. They're just making money, just resetting cases all the time. That's where all our tax money is going, just resetting a bunch of cases for people who allegedly are guilty or could be guilty. But then, like Collins, what, we're going to hold people with no evidence and not showing the evidence, like no probable cause really that exists? It's bullshit. It's just a big waste of time, a big waste of money. So, then I met McNabb, which I mentioned him earlier. His story was hard to believe, but then I looked into his trial, I got the records, I got the trial transcript. I found like 30 significant points of error, including a compromised witness who was incentivized to provide false testimony. In particular, he was a convicted sexual offender who appears to have received incredibly lenient sentence in return for his key testimony that ensured McNabb's conviction, for the achieved by the chief of major offenders, Samantha Connect. The parallels between McNabb and Collins are just impossible to ignore. This prosecutor had every best interest of getting this guy convicted. And his charges were serious. It was solicitation of capital murder solicitation of aggravated kidnapping and capital murder. Okay? And they had been rewriting like 7 or 8 times. Like 8 indictments. They couldn't articulate very well. They couldn't get their story straight of what they're getting among. It was a police sting. Wow, can you believe it? Another police sting. And McNabb, his history would suggest maybe he was targeted because he kind of was in some politically motivated things before. It's too long to convey here, but it's not impossible. And he he basically was had all his rights violated. No due process happened. I've never found actually real evidence that to suggest that he was trying to hire a person to kill, to abduct his wife and his wife's friend and kill them. You actually see evidence where he's like, no, like, I don't want you to hurt nobody. What are you talking about? And never paying them. They said that he paid them. They never got paid. They just lie. Every record they give me is tampered with. The records, the dates don't line up. They're changed. It says it's amended. All this stuff is super obvious if I showed it. It's like crazy obvious. It's ridiculous. His case is so damn complicated. That's why I can't get too much into it right now. It would take me hours. These people did everything they could to convict him. And everything they have was either fabricated, made up, circumstantial. That's why he won. He beat the charge of the solicitation of capital murder. And really, they agreed it was because of coercion. The officers coerced McNatt. And that should mean, because they had put the cases together under the guise of it being the same criminal episode. It's like basically saying that if you went, stole a car and then you ran someone over and then you crashed it and hurt someone else. That's a continuous criminal, whatever I just said earlier, episode, criminal episode. So, but then whenever he gets that, so that means when he got that beat, he was acquitted of it. All of them should have been dismissed. Especially in particular when it's about entrapment, there's like these specific laws that exist and these procedures where you dismiss everything, especially because that was the most serious charge. But they refused to. Now they wanted to act like, well, no, we're not consolidating the cases no more. They're separate. And it's like they got the best of both worlds. The whole time they kept saying consolidated, separate, consolidated. It's like, oh my God. It's three separate case numbers. It's just ridiculous. It's like they basically loaded the bases to make sure they could win no matter what. They rigged it against him. And I seen all his evidence, and there's just nothing there that shows that he's guilty. It shows that he's angry. He's making some decisions he shouldn't be making. But you can see how these officers emotionally manipulate him. They keep prying at him like, oh, your wife left you. How dare she? Or, you know, you got to do something about it. And just stuff like that. Like, in general, just like twisting the knife in him to make him act emotional and make some mistakes. But none of those mistakes he made were telling him, I want you to kill my wife, or I want you to do this, I want you to kill her friend, I want you to do this. Like, that doesn't happen. That never happened. I have all of it. But it's like an hour of undercover audio. Maybe an hour and a half. So it's just so much to go through. It's like 2 hours of interviews. It's just ridiculous. So, and then there's another man, you know, I met during this, and recently, maybe a few months ago. He's the one that told me about, he mentioned this funeral home. And I kind of kept it in my head, you know. I really don't want to say the name of it, but it's a person's last game. And, you know, it just kind of clicked in my head when I heard the same name in the undercover audio of Collins. And when I looked at it, he says this name. He says particular name of a person, last name, and mentions an investigation, and watch out for this, and blah, blah, blah. He's like warning Collins about some kind of like police activity. So this man, John Henry Quinones, in that confession, basically he says this guy, this funeral home's owner's name, basically that's who that was. And then that funeral home owner, in that same weekend, basically 2 days before this conversation was recorded, 3 days, 3 or 4 days, something like that, the next night after the murder of the person, which the person's name was Muhammad Ali Badat. I forgot to say that. Another guy got killed. Like, down the block from the funeral home. Like, literally down the block, like a few blocks away. And he was killed with a 30-30 rifle. It's like a big hunting rifle. It's a huge round. Taken from the funeral home without permission by supposedly a worker, whatever. And took it, had an argument, because he had an argument with someone. He took the van, he shot him dead, left. And that was the official story. A lady saw the funeral home van driving away, told the cops this, whatever. It got connected to them. Funeral homeowner. The next, did this within like 7 hours, 8 hours, or let's say at least 15, 20 hours. For sure not more than 24 hours. He goes, he picks up the body, he takes custody of the body, and supposedly ships it to Mexico or to the rightful owner. Somehow he figured out who the owners were, even though it was an illegal immigrant, and they always, like, come on. So he disposes of this guy. And this guy's dead because of his gun. And the complaint is only filed afterwards, like the next 2 days afterwards. That's ridiculous. Like, and you see him sign for his body in the morgue book and everything. Like, they're all in cahoots with each other. But, and then how this all ties together is that in John Henry Quinones's psychological evaluation that they give it to you whenever they arrest you, usually for a felony, it's like you can't help but tell the truth. You know how they say, you know, there's always a little truth in every lie. He just can't help but mention when they ask him, you got a pistol, blah blah blah, and you killed this guy, and he's like, he's telling the psychological person, the therapist, well, I've never owned a pistol, no, but I have borrowed a 30-30 rifle from my friend to go hunting. It's like, what a coincidence. He says a 30-30 rifle. And he says the last game of the first game of the rifle owner whose rifle got someone killed. And that person whoever killed them was never found, never identified, even though they should have easily figured out who this guy was. And he fits the name, similar name of someone that a random guy I contacted said was named Little Ray, and that he was just a real sick bastard. He just like murdered someone point blank, killed him with a gun that same summer. He doesn't know what type of gun it was. He just heard this story secondhand. And I believe he could be talking about the actual killer. But this guy won't answer the phone no more. I don't know. It's ridiculous. And then this all leads up to the investigation of Danny Ling Stevens' death that I just done, where Colin later revealed information about the custodial death of Danny Ling Stevens in Pasadena during the 1970s. Despite initial difficulties locating records, I uncovered newspaper articles and secured the autopsy report, which cast significant doubt on the official ruling of suicide. The autopsy was handled by Joseph Jasimnik. His last name is ridiculous. J-A-C-H-M-C-Z-Y-K. A medical examiner with a troubling history of questionable rulings and politically sensitive deaths. He got caught. Like, there's a triple murder of a woman, a husband, and a little boy, I believe. And they're all dead. They're called the Wangs Threats. It's hard to pronounce it. Wang, I don't know how to pronounce it, really. Wangsthraths? I'm not sure. I've gone through a million names at this point, so it's hard for me to keep up here. But, so, they said that he ruled it a murder-suicide, claimed that the lady, for whatever reason, she just went crazy, shot her husband, shot her baby, and he shot herself in the head. In 1975, he had made a ruling of suicide in that lady's mother's murder. Said that her mother hanged herself with pantyhose, choked herself with pantyhose. I don't know. I need to get those records. I just remember that, to be honest. I just completely forgot about that till now. So obviously that doesn't make sense. Some detective took it upon himself to figure it all out. He figured it out. He figured out who the real killer was. It was her stepbrother who killed them all to inherit their estate, basically. He hired someone to kill them, which to get money. So a lot of money is involved. Kind of not crazy for Joseph Jasimnik and the other people working with him to just be bought off. Because people keep telling me it was that easy back then. And he was very embarrassed by this. He never explained why he was so wrong. He was never held accountable. It's ridiculous. Like, they only figured out who killed those people because one cop refused to give up. And they wrote a book about him. So very much, I kind of feel like this kind of echoes similar to what I'm doing. Because a lot of what I'm doing is out of pure empathy, you know, because I feel a lot for, you know, seeing how these people are mistreated or denied their rights, due process, everything. And I could not stand. They did that to me one time with some misdemeanor. And even with that, they just railroaded me. And I just never would let that go now that I think about it. So I knew I wasn't crazy. They try to gaslight you, say that you're crazy, that you're guilty, blah, blah, blah. But I know that's not true. It's, you know, like, it's not true. So Daniel Stevens, I just got his autopsy report. It points to several points that he didn't kill himself. And then I got more records from Pasadena just today. And they gave me the crime scene photos of his dead body. It was really terrible. And they gave me his photo. We'll try to enclose his photo on here. It's really awful what they did to this boy. He was just a kid. You know, like, ridiculous. He was older than my brother, the one he committed that other crime. And, like, dang, he didn't do anything. As far as I know, they just suspected him of auto burglary. Or burglary, so they're very not specific. But they said that he hung himself. They want people to believe that he took off his straight jacket somehow after they put it on him, put him in a lock padded cell. And he took off the, I guess it has one big leather strap that uses to go around your body, I guess. Took that one off, found a good little small bracket to hang himself with, tied a knot, somehow a knot that was so close, but just enough for him to hang himself. It doesn't even make sense. If you see the photos, which I can't show right now because I'm going to have to blur things, but it doesn't make sense how he killed himself. And they say that it's not true. There's no way that he killed himself because he's like, they didn't even try to save him. They didn't take it off. They said he looked so obviously dead. They didn't, like, that's not even an excuse. He says that he escaped the straitjacket, did all that stuff, hung himself perfectly, blah, 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 and within 15 minutes. That's bullshit. No way. Like, it takes a long time to get out of a straitjacket. I don't believe that. I don't think anyone will believe that. And even then, the time to figure out how to hang yourself, even that takes time. And to die of asphyxia in this cheap, crappy way that he was staged, like, it's like, it takes you, would take maybe 15 minutes to asphyxiate anyways. He wouldn't have time to die. He would have been savable. So they clearly didn't try to save him. They never found him hung. They killed him. And the marks on his neck are, like, around his neck, not angled up, like in usual hangings. It's just everything points to murder. And they even cover their tracks up. If you look at the files, you see how they contradict each other, but they also cover the tracks up where they plan it. It's like they goaded his family into touching the body, to go near it. Where it wasn't, the Pasadena funeral home, for some reason, took it. which is crazy. They, the people who are professionals at making dead people look okay, were the first people who touched the body. That's ridiculous. That, like, I believe that they put makeup on them, and they, who knows what they did. They won't show the actual, like, marks where he was hung, supposedly. He'd have his collar, like, pushed up. Like, come on. And, like, he also, they took it took him to the morgue where they conducted the autopsy. The morgue took it back to them. And this whole time, they still left the leather strap around his neck. And I believe it's to hide the marks, whatever marks he had that weren't from the strap, they're covering it. And that the family went and they just left the body unattended. The family came to look at the body or whatever. They said they needed to take photos to document because they didn't believe he killed himself. And then they say some crazy thing about, oh, I caught this girl trying to look like she was going to pour Coke in his open mouth. Or it said, and then it said that, oh, she put her hands around her his neck, like, squeezing it. And, like, that she was purposely tampering with the body. And it's like, come on. The body, they never took pictures of the actual neck, good pictures. Like, they shouldn't even have to worry about this, because they should have the photos anyways to prove, oh, yeah, she tampered with it. She put her nails marks around the neck. Like, you don't even have to make that allegation because you would have the photos anyways. So you're like, hey, you know, you can prove it. They don't prove anything. They just accuse them of tampering with the body and say, oh, these marks are here because of you. And they use that to basically cover their asses. And I believe those marks were there the whole time. So, I don't understand how they... I mean, I do understand. They get away with this. The Pasadena Funeral Home even sign off themselves to basically cover the cops' asses. It's Pasadena. Of course they're going to cover them. And they just got away with murder. Everything points to that they got away with murder. They did all this work to cover their asses to make sure no one figures out how they killed this boy. There's a lot more details, but I can't go over all of them because I just got that file. But it's very sick how they just try to blame his family, saying like they're trying to set the cops up. And it's far from that. That's bullshit. Like, they don't need to set the cops up. The cops killed him. They should have photos of his neck. And they don't have photos of his neck. They didn't even want to explain the belt being long. The length of the belt. You know, it was long enough to hang yourself technically, but not where the knot's at. That's not long enough. And why didn't they put it into evidence? Why did they leave it on the body? That's ridiculous. Like, that they basically ruined the chain of custody of the leather belt around his neck. The leather strap. So it's like they wanted to ruin the case the whole time to make sure it's not good enough to argue they killed him. And I don't know if they settled out of court. I don't understand what the family did, what they worked out. Maybe they did work. Maybe they had to work something out. Apparently the KKK ran Pasadena back then, and people still think they ran it now. Another elderly man that I'm helping is too afraid to speak. He says he knows some stuff about them, but he's too afraid because he thinks that they'll come after him. That's legitimate people who think they'll kill them. Even Collins, what also supports his belief that Danny didn't kill himself, was that in 1981, when he got arrested for that auto burglary or whatever it was, something about a car. I think they thought he was connected to Danny still, and they wanted to still prove a point. And they grabbed him. They had him behind the jail before they booked him, grabbed him around the neck, and kicked his feet out from under him, slammed his head on the curb, choked him so hard he couldn't speak for 1 week. They were demanding that he gave up his crime partner or whatever, whoever they thought was with him. And him going what they did to Danny, of course he's like, he's not going to say a damn word because they're murderers. Regardless if he tells them, they might kill him too. It could be both. So, it's a lot. I wish I could unpack it better, but if you can see, it's tons of information. So, yeah, that's the best I can summarize it. If I could have written it down, I could have, but it would sound way too prepared, and I don't want that either. These people need to be stopped. I believe that they are dangerous. Even like some of the things they amended with McNatt, they put things like, what do they put? They put, he's suicidal, blah, 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 right? It's like their get out of jail free card. And that this suicidal episode happened in 2017, it's like, how is that possible? He wasn't even home anymore. You guys arrested him. He's been in prison for a year. You didn't go check on him at home. He wasn't home anymore. He was arrested. He was in county. And with me, I asked for one of my things, one of my records, and they start putting that I was suicidal, which they put right there that I said I'll kill myself, which is not fucking true. Because if it was true, then why the fuck does the report just end? No, they just talked to me. They understood what happened, and they said, all right, well, we're getting out of here. And they left. They left me at home. Like, that's it. They're like, all right, cool. They're leaving out a lot of parts. A lot of parts, like the part where they demanded to see where, if I had a firearm. And they kind of said it in a way where they kind of tricked me to say I did, you know, like I really wanted to just go leave me alone. But I was like, oh, well, damn it, I already mentioned it. And he said, all right, well, where is it? And like, well, it ain't even here. It's in my car. And he was like, oh, really? Like, yeah, it's in my car, glove compartment. And he was like, oh, then he started berating me about, oh, you just leave it in your glove compartment. And I'm like, well, I mean, it's my tiny pistol for protection. It's for my car. And it's Pasadena. It's pretty damn safe for the most part. Like, I really not anticipating the getting robbed or whatever. Having my car burglarized. Because cops are real assholes there. They're patrolling all the time. So he pretty much said, all right, cool. We'll just pick it up. Let's just pick it up. Pick it up tomorrow. So we don't, that way we don't gotta do anything. And we did our job. Everything's cool. I'm like, all right, fine. And then he doesn't document that he took my gun. He stole my gun. Like, it's a felony. I believe he stole it. They have not even tried to give it back to me. I've already told them. And they don't want to acknowledge anything about my gun that he took. And they did the same thing with McNatt. They took his guns too. They took like 5 or 10 guns, I don't know. But they took a good amount of guns. They took money, gold, cash, everything from his safe with no warrant. I know there's no warrant. We have a copy of the warrant, and it does not say they can get anything from the safe. That's illegal. These people are just like thugs. They're like the mafia. This is organized crime. That's what the cops are. I believe they are. And all this trying to help victims or doing the little right stuff, that's all bullshit. That's just like small time stuff they do on the side. They really are there to be criminals. So that's pretty much all I can say without sounding redundant at this point. But if you can, please do whatever you would like to do. You can make calls to Pasadena. You could probably make requests, emails, find emails. I'm not going to provide anything because then they're going to say that I'm doxing them or brigading people. It's public information. You can just go look up and make your own comments. You can contact Congresswoman Sylvia Garcia, or you can contact the your local state representative or the state representative of my area, which would be 77029, or McNatt's area, which I admittedly don't know the area code, to be honest. And he probably wouldn't want me to tell anybody where he lives. He's very afraid of retaliation. But you can do all that. Richard Wayne Collins has a book he published. It's on Amazon. He doesn't want no handouts. You can just go ahead and buy the book on Amazon, or they have a digital copy and hardcover, paperback. And that's pretty much all I could say. I'll probably put a website, but I have to work on that too. There's a lot to do, and I have a regular job. So I'm pretty sure tomorrow he has an appointment with his attorney to see the evidence, and he's going to try to get copies of it. She's been dragging her feet, trying to act like she can't give it to us, like it's illegal. It's not illegal. It's very illegal for her to give him copies of his evidence that proves conclusively that he's innocent, you know, which never happens before. Usually the prosecution stuff, that's that they never handle anything that's, you know, in your favor. But they fumbled it now because they interviewed the lady in which she, maybe I didn't mention this part, where within 30 days, 30 days after his arrest, when they interview her, telling her, hey, we caught the guy, blah, 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 we're going to need your statement, follow up with charges or with the charges we did. And she just started recanting. She said, I was never raped. I don't know who, I don't know what you're talking about. If I was raped, I would remember. I didn't report it. She just started making every excuse in the book to try to recant, but then not call herself a liar because she knows that's illegal. So, yeah, it's ridiculous. It's stupid. It's just like putting into question people's real crime victims when people do this stuff like this. I know she's lying. I'm not afraid to say she's lying. I don't feel like having to scream that so much because I don't really get to prove that anymore. She's proving it herself. And I mean, Colin's holding on animosity towards her. He was of the mind that he knew she was just saying these things to probably get government assistance and stuff like that. She had no choice. She was homeless and blah, blah, blah. So he felt for her. He just wished that she hadn't done such a bad job. In the end, she could have probably been more honest. She probably could have told him, let me see a picture of him, and she could have said, you know what, that isn't him, I don't know, you guys made some kind of mistake, anything other than I don't remember. But I think any other thing, she just knew that they'd get her in trouble, or they might have even coerced her and forced her to, you know, keep it vague for their benefit. She might have been in danger herself. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them, past HPD either. But yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to tell everybody my story here.
Okay. Hey, everybody. That's a wrap. This is David, Think and Act Locally. And Eric Sanchez, that's his story. I will dig into it more, but as you guys all know, if you've stuck with us this long, it's a lot of information. And there's some digging to do and to figure out what's what. So we'll do our best to do that, and we'll keep you updated as we find out. Y'all have a good day. Make it a great day. Thanks.
Bye.